Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Captain's Heiress by Amy Jarecki, narrated by Philip Batley. 1. Early Summer, 1813. When labouring to piece together ancient, brittle fragments, a single error could render an entire tablet untranslatable. Which was why Isabella Harcourt had resituated her writing table in the window embrasure and covered it with white linen. Not only was she making the best use of the sunlight, day after day she toiled alone in her quest to uncover the story from the tablets she had unearthed among the Roman ruins in the southeast corner of her father's estate. With her quizzing glass in hand, she curled forward as she searched for a piece about the size and shape of her little fingernail.
Aha! Have I found you?
After selecting a pair of surgeon's tweezers from their place at the side of the table, she held the quizzing glass steady while carefully plucking the fragment from the white cloth, peppered with many of the same bits and pieces. Isabella gripped her elbows against her sides to hold her hands as steady as possible while she moved the tiny piece above the ancient wooden tablet and carefully placed it into the gap.
Not quite, she mumbled,
lightly tapping the piece with the point of the tweezers until it slipped into place, or at least it seemed as if it had done. To verify, she leaned nearer with her glass and examined the fragment's edges.
Very close fit indeed.
She sat back and examined the Latin word the sliver had completed.
Nudus.
Though Isabella was a very sensible woman, her face warmed considerably as she stared at the word that, translated into English, meant nude or naked. Moreover, her words came out a bit breathless as she interpreted the sentence.
When I close my eyes, I see you naked before sleep comes to me.
Isabella flicked open her fan and cooled her cheeks.
My goodness, sir. You weren't shy about expressing the depth of love for your wife, were you?
Behind her, a soft knock resounded from her bedchamber door before it clicked open. Jolting upright, she shifted a bit of paper over the tablet. Not that anyone at the manor would care overmuch about the ancient Roman's love letter to his wife, but being discovered translating the word nudus was disconcerting all the same.
There you are, said Papa, which was rather odd. At breakfast this morning, Isabella had mentioned that she planned to work on translating the tablets today. She worked on them most days, really, as they had become somewhat of an obsession.
Carefully, she placed her tools on the right edge of her writing table, side by side, their handles perfectly parallel, at least as perfect as one could possibly manage. Then, after pushing her chair away, over her shoulder, she regarded her father, who had moved in front of the hearth, standing with his hands clasped atop his waistcoat.
"I thought I'd find you here, my dear."
"Yes, I suppose it was hardly a guess, given that we discussed today's agenda over coddled eggs and toast."
"Indeed," Papa said, then cleared his throat and consulted his pocket-watch. "Well, you are aware that I've always wanted what is best for you, are you not, my dearest?"
Isabella's first hint that something was off was his mention of finding her, but now that Papa had referred to her as dearest, an endearment he rarely used, not to mention he failed to look her in the eye, Isabella feared the worst. Had someone died? One of the servants? A close relation? She pushed to her feet and gave her father her full attention. Kingston Harcourt was a former officer in the army, and always looked everyone in the eye, to the point where he frequently rendered newcomers most uncomfortable.
"I can concur with that," she said rather uncommittedly,
as her mind riffled through her childhood, much of which was spent alone, or at least without her father in residence at the West Sussex Manor, during which time she often wondered if he cared about her at all. Regrettably, she'd never known her mother, who had died in childbirth. Though Isabella wasn't exactly sure if it was in her best interests to be raised by nursemaids, tutors and governesses while Papa was executing his duty for king and country, or if her upbringing was more aptly in Britain's best interests. Arguing such a point would be senseless. The fact of the matter was, her father believed he had always acted with her welfare in mind, and there was never any use debating otherwise. "Good. Good." Papa turned and stared up at the portrait of Isabella's paternal grandmother above the mantel, loudly clearing his throat. "I have decided it is time for you to marry." Suddenly rendered speechless and dry-mouthed, Isabella gaped at her father's back, her skin growing hot and clammy. Surely he misspoke. Had Papa just taken a few nips from his flask? It was a bit early for imbibing in liquor, even for him. When her father neither turned nor expounded upon his declaration, she snorted with a sardonic laugh. "Marry? Good heavens! It has been years since we broached that subject." Still, she hadn't imagined he'd just blurted out that he had decided she needed to marry. Isabella crossed her arms over her midriff and paced several steps before collapsing onto the settee. At the ripe age of 25, she was well and truly a spinster. Yes, she'd endured a London season, but had fallen quite short of the ton's expectations for the daughter of a knight. She wasn't a particularly graceful dancer. She was positively abominable at flirting, and more than once she found herself at a complete loss for words when addressed by a courtier. Oh, and yes, she had learned that when attending a ball, one did not exactly encourage a gentleman's affections when one turned and fled to the women's withdrawing room. "It is time to seriously consider it again, my dear." Papa pulled a letter from inside his doublet and ran his fingers over the creased parchment. "I have been exchanging correspondence with a gentleman in America for some time." A stone the size of a cannonball lodged in the pit of Isabella's stomach. Or was it her throat? "About me?" she squeaked, realizing the cannonball was truly gagging her, and praying Papa had been writing to the American about the breeding of bantam chickens, or any topic that did not include her. "Indeed. His name is Mr. Arendt Schuyler. He has amassed quite a fortune, and—" "And?" Isabella's palms grew moist. Perhaps it was best if her father didn't continue this discourse. "Has Mr. Schuyler come to England?" Papa tapped the missive against his palm. "No, he is in Georgia." "The state of Georgia? In America?" No, her blathering didn't exactly sound intelligent, but her father had just come into her bedchamber and told her he had decided she would marry, and then mentioned corresponding with possibly a complete stranger across the Atlantic Ocean. "That's what I've been trying to say. Mr. Schuyler is a well-respected, older gentleman who is seeking a well-mannered English wife with whom he can start a family. Did I mention he is well-to-do?"
"Yes, you did say he had amassed a fortune.
How, may I ask?" If Papa uttered a single word about the slave trade, she would explode. "Silver."
"Oh."
Isabella folded her shaking, sweaty hands.
"Oh, my."
"Quite." Papa finally met her gaze. "He has offered a very generous finder's fee, one that will enable me to live out the rest of my days in comfort." This was new. They'd always lived comfortably, if not frugally, at the manor, and never once had her father mentioned the coffers might be a bit sparse.
"But do you not have a pension from your time in the army?"
"I do. However, it is hardly enough to keep this estate afloat. Also, I must add that once I am gone, your cousin will inherit, and though he's a decent man, you will be best served by marrying Mr. Schuyler."
For the love of daisies, Papa is as sober as a stone, and as sane as he had seemed to be at breakfast.
Isabella placed a hand over her mouth,
her mind darting through a number of plausible arguments, and quickly settled on the most sensible.
"Well, surely the gentleman will want to meet me first. One doesn't usually exchange a few letters with a woman's father and decide he's in love."
"Love has nothing to do with it. The man was quite taken with my descriptions of you. He was even impressed by your fanatical obsession with those ridiculous tablets."
"Ridiculous? Papa, you helped me excavate the site, and you did not think they were ridiculous when we found them?"
"Yes. Well, that was before you cast every other interest aside and shut yourself away in this chamber. Those tablets have become your ruin."
She pulled a pillow embroidered with roses onto her lap and hugged it.
"So, Mr. Schuyler believes me ruined?"
"Of course not. He has made an offer of marriage which I have accepted on your behalf. Furthermore, I have had the good fortune of corresponding with the Duke of Dunscombe. As you are aware, his father was one of my closest friends."
Unable to respond, Isabella gave a cautious nod.
"As it turns out, His Grace has established quite an enterprising venture for his brothers, the second eldest captaining his own ship."
Obviously oblivious to the expression of horror Isabella had fixed upon her face, Papa rocked back on his heels and grinned.
"Fortunately, Lord Gibb will soon be taking a shipment of whiskey to America, and I have reserved a berth for you on his ship, the Prosperity."
Holy help. The gentleman from Georgia was not intending to travel to England. This state of affairs could not grow worse. "You're sending me to America?"
she squeaked, clutching the pillow so tightly the seams were surely about to burst.
"Yes. Have you heard nothing I've said? Come, Izzy, this is a good match with a mature man who I am quite confident will treat you well."
"What if after I arrive we discover we are not suited?"
"How can you be so negative at a time when you ought to be over the moon? Good heavens, my dear, I have put forth a great deal of effort to secure this betrothal on your behalf. The least you can do is express your appreciation. Moreover, I expect you to apply yourself to this marriage with the same fervour you have applied to your tablets."
Isabella looked to her pillow, while a tear dripped onto the black velvet. This was the most flabbergasting news of her life. Not only were hundreds of questions whirling around in her mind, she was nauseated, and quite possibly about to regurgitate her breakfast. And Papa wanted her to fling all caution out of the window and shout for joy. She was about to be ferried across the Atlantic Ocean on a ship laden with whiskey, where, after suffering the perilous crossing, she would meet a stranger who, with a stroke of his pen, had convinced her father that he owned a silver mine and would treat her like a queen.
"What if he owns a tar pit and only claims to be a silver miner? I'll be sailing on the Prosperity. The deprivation is more apt."
She glanced up, regarding her father out of the corner of her eye.
"How much time do I have before I must set to packing my things?"
"I'm glad you asked, my dear."
Papa headed for the door. "We shall be taking the carriage to Dunscombe's estate in Musselburgh. It abuts the Firth of Forth, where Lord Gibb's ship will meet us." He rested his hand on the latch and glanced over his shoulder. "We leave at dawn."
"Dawn?"
she asked, her gaze darting to her tablets.
"That's not enough time."
The door closed, only to be reopened by Maribel, Isabella's lady's maid, who slipped inside, her expression bereft. Casting the pillow aside, Isabella pushed to her feet.
"How long have you known?"
"Your father informed the serving staff moments before he came up here. 'Tis pure insanity below stairs. The coachman is already preparing the carriage and a wagon. The footman will be bringing your trunk shortly."
Isabella clapped a hand over her mouth, tears splashing into her cheeks as she closed her eyes.
"I cannot believe Papa would do this to me."
"It is a shock to all of us, miss."
Maribel, who had been Isabella's ever-present companion since they were children, wrapped her in an embrace.
"I'll be with you, never fear. We shall face this together."
Unable to hold in her sobs, Isabella buried her face in the maid's shoulder.
"Thank you." "There, there. We must make haste."
Maribel smoothed her palm up and down Isabella's back.
"You do intend to take your tablets, yes?"
Oh, absolutely. Before anything else, they must go,
Isabella managed between sobs. Gathering her wits, she pushed away and headed for her secretary.
My notes, journals, and books must all be packed. The finished tablets need to be crated with utmost care to ensure the glass does not break, no matter how rough the seas.
She ran her finger over the frame of the first tablet she had translated.
We shan't be leaving these here. Of course not.
Maribel removed the frame, but Isabella immediately took it from her.
I want to pack the tablets myself. Please, tend to my clothing and effects.
2.
Drop anchor!
Captain Gibb McGalloway shouted, pleased with his chosen mooring in the Firth of Forth off the Musselburgh coast. He'd strategically nestled his sizeable bark between a schooner and a larger brig, where his ship ought not to be immediately recognised. He opened his spyglass and panned it across the scene occurring in the private park behind Newhales, not the largest but his brother's favourite of the ducal estates. Martin, the patriarch of the family and Duke of Dunscombe, had sent word that Gibb was to sail into the Firth after delivering the shipment of American sharecropper cotton to the McGalloway mill and loading scores of barrels of McGalloway whiskey into the Prosperity's hull.
"It appears there's quite a gathering,"
said Archie MacLean, quartermaster and best mate a captain ever had.
"Aye, a gathering of giggling imps."
Still peering through his spyglass, Gibb spotted his two youngest sisters, Modesty and Grace. They babbled among a plethora of young ladies, whom he would definitely avoid. The wee chits all wore their hair down or in pigtails with ringlets, which meant every last female was far too young to be trifled with. A bit further to the left, Gibb recognised Miss Hay, the lassie's governess, who was doling out slips of paper, after which the girls dispersed in dozens of directions. In the distance, ample quantities of white muslin moved among the columns of the summer house, a Romanesque Palladian bridge built across the curling pond, used for the sport of curling during winter, but now being transformed to a watery refuge by a flock of swans. Inside the summer house, Gibb easily picked out his mother, holding court in the centre of a party of women who, he guessed, might be the mothers of the gaggle, and yet another gathering of females to be avoided at all costs. Spotting a flicker of white, he shifted the glass off to the port bow, where he found the view a great deal more interesting.
Who might this be?
Though the woman's face was hidden by a bonnet, judging by her posture and lithe movements, she was not a child. The fact that she was sitting off alone beneath the great sycamore was a good indication that she was not one of the mothers in the summer house. Perhaps he might have a bit of fun before Martin got hold of him. The Duke was forever concocting new ventures of which Gibb was expected to approve instantly and exuberantly. Often, said ventures required a monumental effort of rearranging and posed a royal pain in Gibb's backside. Nonetheless, such endeavours usually fattened his coffers, and for that he was eternally grateful. He closed his spyglass and looked to Archie.
"Lower my skiff, then give the men a day's leave." "Your skiff is already waiting and manned, Captain, and I'll grant leave to all except those on watch." "Excellent, and tell the crew not to step beyond Fisherow Harbour, else we might end up sailing without them. I don't intend on remaining here any longer than necessary." "Aye, sir."
Gibb had the crew pull his skiff ashore in the northeast corner of the estate, behind the tree line, where he wouldn't be seen. After letting the men know they could find a schooner of ale by walking 5 minutes along the shore, he skirted down the line of trees until he spotted the sycamore he used to climb with his brothers when he was a lad, the same tree now providing shade to the recluse, who, quite obviously, was avoiding the celebrations. From behind the enormous tree's trunk, he watched the woman for a time as she turned the pages of her book and looked out to sea now and again, shaking her head and sighing. But dash it if he couldn't see her face. The brim of her bonnet was akin to a trumpet, and no matter which way she turned her head, the blasted hat refused to even reveal the colour of her hair. The woman's neck was long,
her shoulders femininely petite, and she wore a pink shawl lightly draped over her elbows. Well, the only way to determine if she was a beauty or nay was to introduce himself. Shielded by the trees, he hastened up a few yards, then stepped out and approached as if he had never been right behind the lass.
"Either your book is extremely riveting, or you're as averse to crowds as I."
The lady startled, jolting subtly before she looked up. Black hair with tight curls framed an oval face. With little colour in her cheeks, her mien was a tad plain, but pleasant enough for Gib to idle away the afternoon while avoiding his brother.
"I'm not terribly fond of crowds," said the lass, her eyes narrowing as if she were trying to place him. "Her Grace is hosting a house party for her daughters and their friends, and I'm afraid I'm a little too old for scavenger hunts."
Gib slid onto the bench beside her without so much as an introduction. The mere thought made him grin. He detested polite society and the gutted rules they adhered to almost more than he detested Napoleon. Almost. Napoleon was a tyrant who needed to be introduced to a guillotine.
"So Lady Modesty and Lady Grace are hunting treasure, are they?" he asked.
"Yes, in the stables, of all places. Though I dare say the stables at Newhales are large enough to house a dozen families."
She wasn't wrong. The Duke required ample space in which to store all his carriages as well as his horses. Gib chuckled.
"At least the park is quiet."
Judging by the numbers of young girls he had seen, they must have sounded like a flock of laying hens before they'd been dispersed. The lass smiled, albeit sadly.
"It is."
Gib hesitated for a heartbeat.
Goodness, her eyes were dark. Almost as black as her hair. And why the blazes would a woman be melancholy when visiting Newhales?
For visitors, the manse and grounds were akin to stepping into a storybook. And this woman wasn't even wearing mourning.
"Ach, 'tis a fine day for reading."
He leaned in and glanced at the page.
"What has you entertained? A love story with a dashing hero and a wilting violet?"
She showed him the cover.
"Mythic early history of Italy and its people. No white knights and damsels, I'm afraid."
Perhaps the reading material was a bit too dreary for the lass, or perhaps not. Gib crossed his legs and sat back, his kilt slipping up his thigh a bit. He didn't bother to push it down. He rarely did. Once he left the King's Navy, he'd donned a kilt and hadn't put on a pair of trousers since.
"Are you something of an antiquarian?" he asked.
"You could say that. My father and I uncovered a villa on his estate in West Sussex, and I've been captivated by Roman history ever since."
"Fascinating."
He looked at the woman again, wishing he could pull the pink ribbon securing her bonnet and remove it from her head. On closer inspection, her look was remarkable. Not a classical beauty, but complex, with a small chin and cheeks that needed to be broad enough to accommodate those enormous eyes. Gib didn't often slide onto benches with gentlewomen and engage them in conversation. In fact, since he'd joined the Navy, he hadn't interacted with them much at all. Most of his contact with women consisted of discreet interludes, usually above a tavern not far from any given shore. A woman who enjoyed antiquity was something novel indeed. He tapped the book.
"Tell me something riveting about mythic early history of Italy and its people."
She smoothed her hand over the cover.
"I do believe you are teasing me, sir."
"Not at all. As a matter of fact, as we were riding across the border into England, my brother and I once took a bit of a detour and explored some ruins near Haddington. Decidedly Roman they were."
Lovely black eyebrows disappeared under the bonnet, as if he'd just ignited a spark somewhere in the recesses of this blue stocking's mind.
"What did you find?"
"A great deal of rubble atop stone walls, charred as if there had been a fire."
"How intriguing."
Miss Ravenhair leaned forward.
"Did you report your find to the Society of Antiquaries?"
"Nay, a sheep farmer and his dog decided we were trespassing."
Gib chuckled at the memory.
Little did the scrappers know they were chasing after the eldest sons of the Duke of Dunscombe. Good Lord, had the old farmer been a bit more accurate with his musket, Gib mightn't be here at the moment. That, or he'd be the Duke, God forbid. He pointed to a pair of archery targets standing alone, sporting not a single arrow.
I take it archery was ne popular among the wee lassies.
I don't recall any of them giving it an attempt, though there was quite a to-do with battledore and shuttlecock, at least until the scavenger hunt was announced.
Gib spotted the quivers of arrows and bows up along the tree line.
Do you enjoy archery?
I do. The raven-haired lass set her book aside and sat a bit taller. I'll have you know I was the West Sussex Fair champion of 1807.
I'm duly impressed, he said.
6 years ago, this woman was most likely about his sister Grace's age, or near enough.
If you're a champion, then how about a wee wager?
Are you an archer, sir?
More or less. Have I taken archery lessons? Yes. But I must admit I have not won any awards. That puts me at a significant disadvantage, he said, giving her a wink.
Gib could expertly shoot just about any weapon invented by man, be it bow and arrow, a musket, pistols, or a slingshot. He stood and offered his hand.
Come, the day is far too fine to sit idle.
She placed her gloved fingers in his palm. But did you not just say it was fine for reading?
That was before I saw the targets.
He tugged her to her feet, surprised to find that she was quite petite in stature, her head not quite coming to his shoulder.
Now, how about that wager?
What sort of wager? She asked as they stopped at the quivers of arrows. She picked up a bow and tested it for tautness.
It ought to be something very dear.
He drummed his fingers atop the McGalloway brooch at his shoulder, while a plethora of ideas rifled through his mind. It was then that he noticed her lips. Pert, pink, a wee bit pouty.
I can. If I win, you shall give me a kiss.
She released the string and let it twang.
I beg your pardon? What sort of gentleman wagers a kiss? I hardly know you.
You ken me well enough. I like Roman history and I dislike crowds. What else is there?
A great deal more, mark me. He handed her an arrow, then caught her by the wrist as she took it.
What say you, lass?
He asked, gazing into those enormous black eyes. He was a sea captain first, and though he'd been raised as the spare son in a ducal house, he'd never completely embraced the rules of etiquette, unless he could use them to his advantage.
I've issued a challenge. Have you the courage to accept?
Licking her lips, Miss Ravenhair cast a nervous glance toward the house.
A small peck, perhaps, and no one must see.
Very well.
Gib liked that just fine. No meaningful kiss ought to be imparted in public.
And you, madam, what do you wager?
The lassie's nostrils flared as she looked at him from head to toe.
If you win, I should like to know your name, sir.
A wry grin stretched his lips. There this woman stood, completely aware that he'd sidestepped every convention of propriety, and yet she would only know his name if she won their competition. Perhaps a wee bit of mischievousness smouldered in the heart of this history-reading blue stocking.
"Why were you sitting alone?" he asked.
She loaded her bow and glanced at him over her shoulder.
"I have a great deal on my mind."
Gib smirked. She most likely had a younger sister in the group of scavenger hunters who was as much of a hellion as grace or modesty. Miss Ravenhair released her arrow. It fell short of the target by a good yard. She immediately turned, blushing most adorably. Ah, yes, with a bit of colour there was a striking elegance to her look.
Of course, you'll allow 2 shots for practice.
He let his gaze dip down the length of her muslin day-gown and back up.
Inventing rules as we go along?
He asked, his tongue slipping to the corner of his mouth.
Not at all.
She tossed her head, oblivious to his appreciation. I've never used this bow before.
I'll grant you that, Gib bowed. Two shots for the lady.
You may have two as well.
Her second arrow.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?